Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. They're not yet old enough to vote, but they want to hold the state accountable for how it's treated environmental issues. Val Holly Frank is a 15-year-old who splits her time spending weekends at the Big Cypress Reservation in rural Hendry County and weekdays in Weston, Florida, where she goes to school. She's part of the lawsuit that was filed last month in Leon County. Last week, I was able to talk with Val Holly and attorney Guy Burns. He's a managing partner at Johnson, Pope, Borco, Ruppel, and Burns, which is based out of Tampa. And he's one of the attorneys arguing this case. Here's that conversation. Could you tell me a little bit about this case? What brought it up? And tell me a little bit about the legality of it.
Certainly. The case is based upon aspects of the Florida Constitution. That's Article 2, Section 7, as well as Florida statutory law and common law that basically protect the environment and require our elected public officials, in this case, namely the governor and Commissioner of Agriculture, Adam Putnam, and the head of the Department of Environmental Protection, to take actions to protect the environment, including air quality and related factors that are directly linked to global warming or climate change. And the current administration has failed to take any action. In fact, the actions they have taken have been detrimental to greenhouse gas emissions. And so there's a group out of Oregon that has organized plaintiffs around the country to take on these causes. They have a case currently pending against the U.S. government and have helped put together cases against various states around the United States, Florida being one of them. And they've always focused on having youth plaintiffs such as Val Holly be the plaintiff parties to the case, and that's how Val Holly and I got together.
So the Constitution itself, does it say something about protecting the environment, or what does the Constitution say that you're pointing out? Does it say? I mean, I can't imagine the. The Constitution says something about greenhouse gas emissions and climate change, or maybe it does, and I don't know.
No, it does not use the word greenhouse gases itself. Here's what the Section 7 of Article 2 says. It's titled Natural Resources and Scenic Beauty. It says it shall be the policy of the state to conserve and protect its natural resources and scenic beauty. Adequate provision shall be made by law for the abatement of air and water pollution and of excessive and unnecessary noise and for the conservation and protection of natural resources. So, our contention is that the Constitution, as well as certain statutes that have been passed in the state of Florida, as well as the common law that we inherited when the country was founded, essentially make the governor and other elected officials fiduciaries. And they hold the environment effectively in trust for the constituents of the state, and they, according to the Constitution, shall make adequate provisions for the abatement of air quality, air pollution, and water pollution. In our instance, our contention is, and the suit's based around the greenhouse gas emissions, mainly carbon emissions, that those are directly related to global warming, which in turn we have sea level rise, sea level warming, et cetera, et cetera.
It's interesting to hear that passage from the Constitution. And Val Holly Frank, when you hear that piece of the Constitution, how does that make you feel that that was actually even put in place? And how do you feel about the way that that has been held up by elected officials?
It's really sad. For me personally, it's upsetting that something like that can be put into place, and how these unjust and really just incompetent people put these laws in place. And I'm sure these people, maybe they mean no harm, but these laws shouldn't be made and they shouldn't be kept in place.
Well, the law itself would be protecting the environment. It sounds like they're just kind of being ignored is what the case is saying. Tell me a little bit about, you spent your weekends at the Big Cypress Reservation in rural Hendry County, correct?
Yeah.
Tell me, have you seen changes since when you were little? I mean, you're still 15, but I mean, you know, I'm sure you have memories from 5-7 years ago. Has anything changed?
Yeah, I've seen a slight decrease in some of the reptilian species. I don't see as many snakes or frogs or just small animals in general around. Of course, there could be other reasons for that, but there has been a decrease in their population, and there has been an increase in pythons and mosquitoes, and mosquitoes love their constantly warming habitat.
I'm wondering a little bit how much your heritage plays into your desire to become part of this.
I don't really think that it, I mean, it is an important part to me because this is where I've grown up. I'm European also, but the Seminole part of me, like, I have roots from Florida, like, my ancestors were from Florida, and I am a Florida-born kid. And it's always been important to me, and the Everglades has always been a unique and interesting ecosystem for me to explore and enjoy. And I hope that everyone can explore and enjoy it on their own terms without feeling rushed because climate change is destroying it.
Do you really fear that at your core? That climate change is going to destroy the environment you live in?
Yeah, I do fear that it is going to cause drastic changes and drastic effects. We can already see changes in the ocean currents and the extreme weather that is coming along. And it's no secret that climate change is happening and that it's real. We need to show our lawmakers that we're serious about it, and we need to show them that it is not just a hoax.
And Guy Burns, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how this lawsuit is attempting to hold elected officials accountable for their actions in upholding the Constitution. What kind of damages are you going to be seeking with this lawsuit?
We are not seeking damages, as a matter of fact. So one of the things I want to make sure the listeners know is that our very courageous youth plaintiffs, such as Val Holly, she's not looking for money. What she's looking for is a remedy for the good of the public, and that is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and therefore do our part in reducing global warming. But so what if I think people are generally familiar with the school desegregation cases that we lived with, starting with Brown v. Board of Education going forward. And what people went to court over, they said the schools are not being desegregated. We would like the court to enter a ruling saying that they need to integrate the schools. And those rulings were made. And then the court said, you, the school district, must go ahead now and come up with a plan to integrate the schools. That may involve busing. It may involve other things. But give us a plan. And failing the school districts, some of the school districts coming up with a plan, the court then fashioned its own plan. So taking that model and applying it to this, what we're asking the court to do is to declare that the greenhouse gases and carbon emissions are a preeminent cause of global warming, that under the Constitution and the other laws we've cited, that the state needs to come up with a program to protect the environment and to reduce these greenhouse gases. And failing that, if the state's given an opportunity to come up with a program and plan and fail to do that, then we would ask the court to impose a plan. So none of that's going to happen overnight and quickly. It's a long journey, but we're starting it right now, and that's what we want.
I guess the next question that I would like to ask you is a little bit about why is there an emphasis on having young people be the plaintiffs? Is this kind of like a symbolic gesture of who we're leaving the earth to?
I believe that the youth plaintiffs, the ones we have in this case and the ones that I've met from other cases, first of all, are all very bright, they're very articulate, and they're well engaged and have a passion for this issue. That, number one. Number two, they are people that have most of their future ahead of them and not behind them. So it may not make sense to have people of my age be a plaintiff and take on the responsibilities of this if we don't have the same horizon that the plaintiffs in this case do. So it's a combination of their age, the future that they have at stake, and a combination of that and their intelligence, enthusiasm, and passion for the cause.
Val Holley, I want to ask you, does it make you kind of bristle? Does it kind of irritate you when people say, oh, well, why are you having young people? Because is it just because it's symbolic? Or does it mean for you? Do you feel like you're being discounted as a younger person?
I don't think we're being discounted. Because if somebody does come up to me and say that stuff like you said, I believe that they haven't heard what us young people have to say. Everybody who hears us is always kind of shocked to see that we kind of know what we're talking about and that we have a real passion for this. But once they hear that, they're totally on board, and those who don't listen to us are the ones who doubt us.
And those doubters, how do you hope to convince them?
I hope to convince them just I want to stand with my fellow plaintiffs and teach people. I don't want to scorn people for not knowing or scorn people for having their own opinions about stuff, but I do want to teach people the facts. I do want to teach people that it is destroying our planet, and I do want to teach them that there are different ways to change our everyday lives that will slowly change the planet for the better.
Tell me a little bit about your co-plaintiffs in this case. Are you friends with them, or have you become friends with them as a result of this?
I have become friends with them as a result of this. I had never met them before the actual press conference in Tallahassee. I had called them, and I had talked to them before. But actually meeting them in person and going out and seeing them, talking with them, I loved to meet them. They were just really smart, intelligent young people, and I was so happy to be around them, and they're really nice. So, yeah, I'd like to say that I've become friends with all of them.
It's kind of nice because you end up being kind of inspired by people that you're meeting through this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And make a few friends out of the deal. Right?
Yeah.
expanding your network beyond just the place where you live. You're meeting people from all across the state.
Yeah.
Have you, what has becoming a plaintiff done? Have you found that you feel more strongly about this issue, or has this changed your life in any way, becoming part of this?
It hasn't changed my life drastically. Of course, there are more interviews than I had before.
Yeah.
But I've always felt this way about the climate because my mom's an environmentalist, and I've always been to her meetings, and she's always taught me about what's happening and how we can fix it. But what this case has done, it's made me think more about what's happening and how to fix it. I never thought that I could do something so big like this, and I guess you never know until you try. My mom always says to me that I know more than I think I do, and I think that's proving correct here.
Gary Burns, I want to turn back to you. You were named one of the best lawyers in America and Lawyer of the Year in the category of Banking and Financial Litigation 2013. You're a very successful attorney. What made you want to get involved in something like this?
Well, I've had the good fortune to be pretty successful in handling large and complex cases that primarily deal with financial disputes, securities, and investment fraud, and those sorts of things. And so I've had several of those awards over the years, including 2013. But over that same period of time and beyond, I have always been involved in a certain amount of public interest litigation. I've had a case going on for about 20 years involving the achievement gap between black and non-black students in the public schools. I've had cases against the housing authorities for lead poisoning and for other constitutional cases involving gender discrimination. et cetera. So I've always done a fair amount of what I would consider public interest litigation. And I had some good friends and former law partners who now retired who got me interested in this case and asked if I would be involved on a pro bono basis with a outstanding group of other lawyers to take on this case. And so I agreed to jump in with the group and move forward.
It's quite a team that's been assembled, and I wanted to ask, what kind of things do you see might be challenging coming your way as you move forward with this?
Well, a case like this always has a lot of challenges. One of them, and we're very fortunate to have our Children's Trust, which is based in Oregon, as an ally on this, because they have one of the first challenges you have is the ability to marshal scientific evidence, including testimony and experts who will come to the cause. So our Children's Trust has worked with a lot of the preeminent experts in the country and the world regarding these issues, so they'll make those people available to us. The next thing that is a challenge is to be able to spend the time necessary not just to present things in court, which is, you know, maybe the fun part and the easy part, but to do all of the brief writing and research and background work that's necessary to put the case together. And our Children's Trust has some legal resources there that they can be, and they can assist those of us who are going to spend a little more time in the courtroom to back us up and give us the bench support that we need to be successful. So, those are the things that are, you know, parts of the case that'll be easier with the kind of backup that we have here.
And I don't want to ask you to tip your hand or anything, but when you're trying to make a case and prove that elected officials haven't been there to ensure the safety of our waters and air quality, what kind of things specifically would you be looking at? Are you going to be looking at staff reductions in the Department of Environmental Protection or things like that? Is that what you're going to be able to point your fingers at when it comes to elected officials in Florida?
Well, when our current Governor Scott, and Governor Scott is a defendant in this case, but he's only a defendant in his capacity as governor, and when we have a new governor next year, that new governor will be substituted into the case, and Governor Scott will be dismissed from the case, or, you know, the name of Rick Scott will be dismissed, but the governor, the new governor, will take his place. But when our former governor, last governor before Governor Scott, was Charlie Crist, and he had taken the steps to put together an environmental assessment, an environmental plan to help address some of these issues, and all of that work has been essentially vacated. Under Governor Scott's leadership, we will be presenting evidence that he, in fact, has issued he or his people reporting to him have issued instructions that people who are involved in the environmental aspects of the administration are not to use the words global warming or climate change. Those terms are forbidden. Basically allowed the expansion of our public utilities through fossil fuel dependency that continues, and have de-emphasized the necessity of going with renewable energy sources, to which solar, wind, or tidal energy.
Mm-hmm.
So they've not only done nothing, but they have, in fact, regressed from where we were when Governor Scott took office.
Those are the kind of things that you're going to be pointing out when you go through the presentation of this case?
Sure.
Yeah.
There'll be those, and I'm sure many others.
So, Val Holly, as a 15-year-old, as a plaintiff in this case, when you hear those kinds of things that have happened just in the last, you know, less than 10 years, what does that make you think?
I just hope that when I get older and my generation gets older, that we can come into office and we can show them what they should be doing. And, you know, it's weird to think that people can do this and get away with it, but I think people have the mindset especially older people, believe that it's not really their problem anymore. And I think that's the main reason I took action, because they're making it my problem, and if it's going to be my problem, I'm going to do something to fix it.
So when you run for president in a few years, anyway, I want to go ahead and wrap up, but are there any thoughts that either of you wanted to add to this that I didn't get to?
I think it's worthy noting that Florida, if Florida was a country, Florida would be producing the 26th largest amount of carbon emissions of any country on Earth. So one of the things that we hear is, even if we change our ways in Florida, what difference is it going to make? If everybody has that attitude, we'll never make any progress. But Florida is not just some little bitty place. We import into our state every year $56 billion worth of fossil fuels to burn in order to make electricity. That resource could over time be redirected to renewables like solar and wind, et cetera.
I mean, it's a sunshine state. I never understood that.
Yeah. And Florida generates less than 3% of its power from solar. If you look at all the states in the United States, Florida is less than in the middle of the pack regarding solar power generation. In some parts of the state, that 3% is near zero. We've made no effort in that regard to speak of. And, you know, Governor Scott he wants to talk jobs, jobs, jobs. Let's get to work. And that's his mantra. And estimates are that there could be as many as 300,000 jobs from solar if we really get after it. So the economics in all sorts of ways favor us making the move to the future to get ourselves off of addiction to carbon-based fuels and into renewables for all sorts of reasons.
That was Gary Burns, one of the attorneys representing the 8 young people in their lawsuit against Governor Rick Scott. We were also talking with Val Holly Frank, the Hendry County teen who is one of the plaintiffs in that case. Our show today was produced by Mike Kanairi, Rachel Iacovone, and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1. WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM. NPR for Southwest Florida.